Well, Mackenzie, welcome back to The Exchange. Some of our listeners may remember that we had you on last year when you had a new book on the business of climate change called Windfall. Did that get you started on your investigation into the Colic grounding?
It did. At least I was interested in Shell and Shell's Arctic plans through the reporting of Windfall. I was actually up on a Coast Guard icebreaker on the Healy in the Chukchi Sea in, I think, 2007. And it was when the State Department was doing its mapping to claim further seabed with an eye to drilling for oil. And, of course, Shell was already doing seismic work and beginning to make its presence known in Alaska. So I was up in Barrow. And I remember on the Healy, I happened to met a person who worked on one of these Shell seismic vessels, or rather, contractor's vessel. And he emailed and said, "You can't see me, but we're within 50 miles of one another." Oh, that's so strange.
Yeah.
So I was curious from then on. I attended the lease sale, the Chukchi Sea lease sale 193, which Shell bid $2.1 billion. I've been following this for a long time.
Yeah. Well, what ultimately convinced Shell that 2012 was the time to push ahead with drilling in the Arctic?
I don't know that it was convinced as so much as they finally got the green light. Mm-hmm. And that did come from the Obama administration, and my understanding, this is all secondhand, but from the news reports I read, it sounds like Obama himself may have said, let's do this. You know, it was an election year, and he did say all of the above. I don't know that if he meant it so literally, but certainly it did seem to come from the very top of the White House to say, let's look at the Arctic and let's look at all that oil up there.
Now, in your piece, you sort of go through step by step all of the problems that Shell faced leading up to the Colic grounding, and you kind of seem to build a case for why those smaller mishaps, including ones that happened right here in our town, led up to this accident. Would you mind explaining that a bit?
Sure. I think it was a pattern that is really only visible in hindsight, and I think if nothing had gone wrong, maybe there wouldn't have been so much scrutiny, although that what happened with the Discoverer itself was somewhat remarkable. People in Alaska know the Discoverer in July of 2012 appears to have grounded. That's the most they'll let me say, but as I think reporters who were there, including yourself, believe that it grounded. Shell says it did not. Whether or not it happened doesn't really matter. To drag anchor was one very visible mistake. And I think that showed one thing was that these are contractors who may not know the conditions in Alaska. Again, you see that same sort of behavior happening with the Colic. The tugboat for the Colic didn't have vents high enough, it seems, for the kind of storms it was facing in Alaska. So the vent system for the engines was taking on water, and that eventually led to its breakdown. So there are a lot of things that, you know, maybe they, if there hadn't been these series of storms, maybe they would have gotten away with it. Mm-hmm. But I certainly think that people who are good at drilling, and Shell arguably is, aren't necessarily the distance to get to where the wells are, the distance from waters that these people are familiar with, mattered quite a bit.
Yeah. You seem fairly convinced that for now Shell's Arctic program is going to be on hold, and it seems like you believe that oil prices have something to do with that.
Yeah, I don't mean to be too convinced, because I don't have too much more insight than people in Alaska may. As you may know, the FOSS and Shell, they're going to use Seattle, where I live, as a home base for the near term. And the Noble Discoverer, if you go on marinetraffic.com, as I like to do every now and then, it was in Singapore, and it seems to be out in the Strait now. I'm not sure if it's going somewhere. They're not going to announce anything too soon, unless it has to do in one of their earnings calls.
Yes, yes.
I guess their deadline would be in the spring, early spring, when they'd have to start getting things in position. But my sense is the number of oil projects they're pulling back from them, even Shell itself in the tar sands in Canada, it's going to be a harder argument internally and to investors that Shell needs to go forward.
There are also questions in the short term sort of about the regulatory environment for drilling after the Colic accident. As you report, the Department of the Interior, the Coast Guard, the EPA all launched investigations, and some of them resulted in significant fines. I guess, where do you see the regulators fitting into this? Do you think they did enough to prevent an accident like the Colic wreck from taking place? And if drilling does resume sometime soon, do you think that they're prepared to respond to that?
I think that more could have been done. I mean, clearly the environmental impact assessment on lease sale 193 in the Chukchi was laughable. They said that, what was it, a billion barrels would be pulled out, and they based all assessments on that. The lawsuit is one reason Shell hasn't been able to return is causing a new EIA. I think that's going through comments right now. The rest of the regulation, I mean, I don't know how much safer you can make something like this if they're bringing the rigs from very far away, if there's no deep water port in the Arctic, if what they're doing is frontier. And I've heard from people saying, you know, in the Coast Guard saying, you know, Shell was the first, and this was bound to happen. You know, they just happened to be the first movers, but this is really difficult. Again, I think you could make it safe. I think you could force all these regulations, and I think that would make the price go up so much to do the actual oil production that it becomes uneconomic.
In the wake of this accident, Shell executives tried to portray it as a marine transit issue, not a drilling accident, and that if regulators forbid them from returning because of the grounding of the Colic, it would have been, like you say, losing $6 billion on a technicality, and $6 billion being the scope of their investment. Looking back, why do you think this accident, you know, didn't put the nail in the coffin, so to speak, for Shell's Arctic drilling program?
That is the $1 million or $6 billion question. I don't know. I do think it's going to be a lot harder. Clearly, the courts are looking upon them with less kindness than they had been. I'm sure this has soured the Obama administration, and I do think that it made it a lot harder to go through the various hoops they'll have to jump. And especially with oil prices being low, maybe the administration will see less impetus to do this. But I think that on the other side of the ledger is that Shell spent a ton of money up there. They are very well connected to Alaska's politicians, for one thing. And there is an argument to drill for oil. I mean, this is what's left is the Arctic. Not necessarily one that I subscribe to, but this is what we have left in the world. It's a strong argument. And it's a strong argument coming from one of the biggest companies in the world. And, you know, as things change in the north and shipping becomes easier, if it's not next year that it happens, I certainly can't imagine that they won't be trying again in 20 or 30 or 40 years.
Well, you can read more about it in Of Ice and Men. That is Mackenzie Funk's new ebook about Shell's Arctic drilling program. Thank you so much for being with us, Mac. We really appreciate your time.
Thanks a lot. Thank you for your own reporting on the story. It helped mine.
Fantastic. Well, stay tuned for more of The Exchange. We'll be back after this break.